going to try to dedicate the next 2 weeks to learning a sugya related to Rosh Hashanah, primarily the sugya of Hilchos Tefillah, unique to Rosh Hashanah. But before one can discuss Hilchos Tefillah and Rosh Hashanah, we have to understand Hilchos Tefillah in general, a little bit of a background as to where we're coming from in terms of the rest of the year of Hilchos Tefillah, and see what is unique and what is highlighted on Rosh Hashanah itself. So yeah, duo before some, we spoke about this many, many times. There is a fundamental machlekes and rishonim about what our entire approach to Hilchos Tefillah is supposed to be on a level of deraisa. What does the Torah itself, I didn't say what the Shulchan Aruch, what the Gemara, what the Din, what does the Torah itself expect of us in terms of davening, the notion of tefillah on a level of deraisa? So there is a famous Shittasei Rambam, which appears in Sefer Mitzvahs, it appears in the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah, where the Rambam develops this idea that min haTorah, there is an obligation to daven every single day. The Rambam seems to understand that many mitzvahs that the Torah doesn't single out, doesn't specify when it's supposed to be done, kind of very, very general statements. So it's understood that you have to do the mitzvah every single day. Like that's what the Primo Gadol writes about Hilchos Tefillah. And also the Torah doesn't say when exactly to put on tefillin. So it's understood that the unit of halacha is considered to be a daily event unless we're told to the contrary. So the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah writes, Amin HaTorah, one is required to fulfill the mitzvah of the B'chol HaVavchem, to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single day. What he has to say, when he has to say it, that's already up for grabs. That's already made the Rabbanon. But in terms of the bare bone minimum, mitzvah Amin HaTorah is once a day, every day. And the Ramban takes great detail, argues with this Rambam. There's many, many questions against the Rambam. And the Ramban basically develops a yesod that there is no such Torah obligation of the B'chol HaVavchem. There is no daily obligation of tefillah. It doesn't mean that according to the Ramban, if you daven, that's not a Torah accepted kind of a thing. It could be that it's a mitzvah kiyumis. It could be that it's a fulfillment of a mitzvah of the B'chol HaVavchem, but obligation is clearly not. So when at all is there an obligation to daven to a Kiddush Baruch Hu min haTorah? When is there an obligation min haTorah? So the Ramban has one comment in one place, then he alludes to something else in a different place. So in one place, when the Ramban, in Sefer Mitzvahs, when he really, really takes issue with the Rambam, so the Ramban writes that there is a mitzvah min haTorah to daven sometimes, but that mitzvah is linked to another mitzvah min haTorah, that's the mitzvah blowing of the chatzotros of Pashas Baal Oscha. Tekiyas chatzotros takes place whenever there's an Eis Tzara. So although the Torah speaks about the prototype of an Eis Tzara is Milchama, the Gemara tells us, when there's a Devar, when there's a Rav, when there are other kinds of plagues and famines, whatever, illnesses, whatever the case may be, whenever there's a significant Eis Tzara, so then there becomes a mitzvah in HaTorah, what is required with the Reis at the Davin. Even though Kiyas Chatzotzros doesn't mention anything about davening, but the Ramban understood that the blowing of the Chatzotzros is supposed to be, it's like a form of tefillah. It's like you're reaching out to Kadosh Baruch Hu without words, you're crying out to Kadosh Baruch Hu from your lathe through the sounds of the Chatzotzros. That goes together with Lashemus of tefillah. So the bottom line is, according to the Rambam, Shmon Esrei on Sunday morning is a mitzvah deraisa. According to the Ramban, it's not a chiyum in deraisa. It's only a chiyum deraisa when there's an eis tzara. Then the Ramban adds on something else. The Ramban in Parshas Emor refers to another kind of a tefillah on a level of deraisa, and that's tefillah of Shabbosos and Yom Tovim. Because the Torah describes Shabbos and Yom Tovim as being Mikra Kodesh. We've spoken about this many, many times in the past. So what exactly does the mitzvah of Mikra Kodesh mean? There are many, many, many interpretations. Probably all of them true halacha. What the term Mikra Kodesh means, so there's the interpretation of the Torah's Kohanim. The Torah's Kohanim says that you have to wear Shabbos clothing on Shabbos. That's part of Mikra Kodesh. You have to wear Yontif clothing on Yontif. If a person dresses in a non-Shabbistic fashion on Shabbos and Yontif, so the Torah's Kohanim says clearly that's a bitul mitzvah min haTorah. That's considered to be a violation of the chiyuv gamah min haTorah of Mikra Kodesh. It's something that one should not take lightly. That one is mechuyav min deraisa to dress Shabbos clothing. Last we checked, Shabbos ends at Tzeis Kechavim. So therefore, this obligation of Mikra Kodesh goes from whenever you begin Shabbos until whenever the halachic end of Shabbos is. There is no miktas yom kekulo on the Seth. It's not like you have to daven on the seventh day Shiva Chalila. You know, so it goes for the duration of Shabbos. In addition to all the interpretations that the Tosha Lepeh has in terms of Mikra Kodesh, the Ramban in Parshas Emor says that Mikra Kodesh kepshuto kemashmo means the following, that Mikra comes from the Losha Ela Kriya Ha'eda, that gathering together, Mikra Kodesh means you have to gather, the troops got to gather the Jewish people together for Kodesh, for holy things. That's what, in a holy assembly, I think is the official English translation. So you have to assemble the Jewish people together for holy kinds of activities. What are the holy activities that you gather people together for? So the Ramban writes, you learn together. So you have to have a learning, public learning on Shabbos. So the rabbi's got to give a drasha, you got to have a shia, you got to have a chumash, you got to have a, say you have to have a Friday night Bismanish, you got to have that. That's all mikra kodesh, says the Rabban. And also, when you gather the people together for Kriyas HaTorah, and when you gather the people together for davening, so says the Rabban, when you daven together as a tzibur on Shabbos or as Yontif, so you're doing an act of mikra kodesh. You're doing kriya eda for the purposes of mikra kodesh. So you see from this Rabban that even though tefillah per se is only midirabbanan, the obligation to daven daily is only an obligation midirabbanan, but the idea of davening at certain times during the year clearly is a mitzvah min haTorah. Some of those days being eis tzaras, and some of those days being days of kedusha. So it's unique that the Yom Noraim happen to have both of these aspects to them. The other Yom Tovim are not eis tzaras. The other Yom Tovim are just Mikra Kodesh. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur have a dual theme to them. And on the one hand, they are Mikra Kodesh, no less Mikra Kodesh than the other Mikra Kodesh, and therefore one is required to dress appropriately on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and one is required to, not on Yom Kippur, but on Rosh Hashanah to eat Mikra Kodesh, etc. So one is required to treat the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur as Mikra Kodesh. So according to the Ramban, that includes getting together and davening together as a tzibur, or learning together, or laying together, etc. as a tzibur. So the davening of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is a fulfillment of Mikra Kodesh, but it's also a fulfillment of Eis Torah. Because the Ramban concedes that whenever you have an Eis Torah, that's considered to be a tefillah deraisa. It's hard to conceive of a greater Eis Torah than Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But the ultimate Eis Torah, when our fate, our decrees are being written and being signed and sealed in the Beis and Shemala, so Eim Lecha Eis Torah Godom Yizol, it's a tremendous Eis Torah. Therefore, it behooves us to daven, not just behooves, it requires of us, Ben HaTorah, to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the tefillos on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, really, probably a Torah, Seres B'Tshuva, are elevated to a tefillah b'eis tzara, which according to the Ramban, would qualify as a chi of gomer of a chos tefillah on a level of deraisa. There is something else that speaks to us uniquely on Rosh Hashanah in terms of the relates to the regular dinim of a chos tefillah. There are several halachas that permeate a chos tefillah that focus on, emphasize on the fact that when a person is davening, one is omid lifnei hamelech. So those halachas of being omid lifnei hamelech apply in very, very real sense in terms of a chos tefillah. Let's say, Lamashal, even the way a person is supposed to dress for davening, so the halacha tells us one is supposed to dress as one dresses omid lifnei hamelech. So that changes according to the time and place. So there are some societies where you omid lifnei hamelech in a very, very formal way. The other place is a little bit more casual. So as I was in Bochum, you know, start the hakmir yesmi, you have to wear this for davening, you have to dress this way for davening, that way for davening. I said, it depends where you are, depends where your time and place are. So it's not halacha Moshe Messina, you have to dress in tzura X, Y, or Z. So it has to be in a more formal kind of a manner. Then there is another halacha that governs Eimed Lefnei HaMelech. The Gemara tells us in the fifth parak of Maseches Brachas that when one davens, so one is not allowed to be drunk. So one should not be drunk any time. But if by some chance one finds themselves they drank a little bit too much, so one is not supposed to daven. How much you're not allowed to drink in order to not be able to daven? So the Gemara says there are two different shiurim. A person even drank a revius of wine is not supposed to daven. But if you have it, if you did, the tefillah is still good. So even though you just had a cup of wine, you want to go, daven. But if you have it, the tefillah would be acceptable. But if a person is a shikwa, a person is mamish drunk, so then the tefillah is not even good with the evidence. What's considered to be mamish drunk? So the Gemara says the shiur is Eino yochel daven lifnei hamelech. That he can't say a straight sentence. He can't talk straight. So that's considered to be a inability to be omid lifnei hamelech. So that's not tefillah. So you see that there are two halachas that are governed by these rules of omid lifnei hamelech. There's the physical, the way a person presents himself in terms of his physical dress and demeanor. And then number two is just simply is he able to speak? Yes, he's able to speak in omid lifnei hamelech. So Reb Chaim in his Sefer and the Rambam popularized this idea that tefillah is omid lifnei hamelech, in the sense that Reb Chaim suggested that that's the ultimate driving force behind the concept of kavana b'tefillah. The Gemara speaks about the significance when a person davens to have kavana, he's supposed to intend, but pay attention to what he's saying. So Reb Chaim says, what exactly does that mean? What exactly is he supposed to be paying attention to? What is the cognitive level that's necessary in order for tefillah to be effective? So Reb Chaim develops, not a great surprise, two dinim, the brisket, the two halachas. There are two different kinds of kavana, says Reb Chaim. There's kavana to the ikar tefillah, the fact that a person has to be aware that they're in the process of davening. What does it mean, the process of davening? So Chaim defines it as being, he has kavanas aimed lifnei hamelach, that he realizes that he's speaking in front of the king, speaking in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the bare-bone minimum kavanah that Reb Chaim says. And he says that kind of kavanah is necessary for the duration of the Chos Tefillah, the Shemoneh Esrei part. You have to have the entire Shemoneh Esrei, you have to be aware of the Omer Lefnei HaMelech. Then Reb Chaim says there are other dinim of kavanah that you have to know what you're saying. You can be Omer Lefnei HaMelech, but you don't know what the words are. So that, for the first bracha is ma'akev. You have to know what the words of the first bracha mean. You have to try as best you can to pay attention to the first bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. You should try to pay attention to all the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, but the first bracha is the most important. So Reb Chaim says that the basic kavanah number one that permeates the entire tefillah, mitchilah v'atzoif, that's kavanas emet lefnei hamelech, because that defines tefillah. That is what tefillah means. Tefillah is an act of being emet lefnei hamelech. So tefillah requires kavanas emet lefnei hamelech, tefillah requires levush emet lefnei hamelech, tefillah requires the ability to speak emet lefnei hamelech. Everything revolves around the relationship of speaking to the king. So it's all of these halachos now have to be put into perspective when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah, l'chari, carries with it a much, much significant, higher degree of that concept of the HaMelech, that the very essence of the Yom Rosh Hashanah, the mitzvah say Yom Rosh Hashanah, is Kabbalah of Malchus Shemayim. The Gemara says this very, very clearly in the beginning of the Maseches Rosh Hashanah, where the Gemara links the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar to the idea of Kabbalah of Malchus Shemayim. The Gemara says that Amra Kadosh Baruch Hu says to the Jewish people, Imu Lefanei Malchios, that you should say in front of me Malchios, Imu Lefanei Zichreinos, Imu Lefanei Shofros. The Gemara links the recitation of the three brachas that we say at Rosh Hashanah to the notion of Kabbalah of Malchus Shemayim. So that's the first and foremost theme of Rosh Hashanah. If you look through the davening, so the truth is that the theme of Malchus Shemayim probably permeates more the davening than anything else, because that's the first the ABCs in terms of what Rosh Hashanah is all about. That's a time of Kabbalah's O Malchus Shemayim. There are some who suggest that that's maybe where the meaning of Tashlich comes from. One of the mysterious Menhagim, I'm not sure exactly, has many, many different sources for. So one of the possibilities for Tashlich is that the Gemara says that when you're a Mamlech HaMelech, so you do it on a Mayan, you do it on a spring, because just as the water flows, so the Malchus should flow, and it should be successful, and it should be continuous. So on Rosh Hashanah, we go to coronate the king, so we go out to the Naharas, we go out to the rivers, in order to be Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we have many, many dinim and many minhagim that revolve around the notion of being Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to such an extent that the Gemara tells us in the end of the first Berakah Berachos that Chazal changed the Nusach HaTfilah, when the Yad Shekinah HaGdol instituted the Nusach HaTfilah, so they changed the Nusach for Aseres HaMetshuvah to HaMelech HaKadosh, to HaMelech HaMishpah, to highlight the fact that it's a special, intense time of Malchus Shemayim. If a person misses different parts of the davening of Rosh Hashanah, a lot of it's not makim, but if you left out the word HaMelech HaKadosh, the word HaMelech, so you missed the boat, you missed the whole story. So Malchus is clearly a primary theme of Rosh Hashanah. So according to this idea that Ilchus Tefillah is so linked to the idea of being Amin Lefnei HaMelech, so it makes sense that there's a special, unique key of Tefillah in Rosh Hashanah. That's the highest, most intense experience of being Amin Lefnei HaMelech. So the Chiv of Tefillah, the obligation of Tefillah, is the highest, the Dafka in Rosh Hashanah. So again, Rosh Hashanah has certain aspects of tefillah to it that are unique to this time of the year. It's a time of Mikra Kodesh, it's a time of Nei Star, it's a time of Amun Lefnei HaMelech. So there's no question that there's a Yom Hashanah is clearly a Yom Tefillah par excellence. How does the uniqueness of tefillah Rosh Hashanah play out to Lamaisa? So here the Mishnayos tell us at the end of the fourth parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah that there are a whole series of brachas that we recite in Rosh Hashanah that we don't recite at any other time, not on Shabbos, not Yom, not a weekday, not another time. And the only other time is Yom Kippur Shal Yovel. We have to wait for Yom Kippur Shal for that one. But we recite the special brachas of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofar. So the Mishnayos speak about these brachas explicitly. So there was a big machlokes HaRishonim. Where did these brachas come from? Who started this idea of saying Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofar? So Rashi has a comment in his parish on Chumash, where Rashi seems to be learning that the recitation of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofar is actually a Torah-mandated requirement. It's a chiyuv gomer min haTorah. How do I know that? Because Rashi comments on his parish in Chumash on Zichron Shua Mikra Kodesh. So Rashi says, you learn from the phrase Zichron that you have to say Zichronos, and you learn from Aniyesh HaMakechem, you have to say Malchias, and you learn from Tzuri, you have to say Shofars. Rashi incorporates all these Mishnayos, all these brachas, all the special davening of Rosh Hashanah into his parish in Chumash. Rashi is giving you a tight, he's giving you a pshat, and so he's not telling you some dinder rabbanan that was instituted later. Rashi's like, this is how you learn pshat in a pasuk in Chumash, and he's learning into the pesukim in Chumash the idea of saying malchus zecharos and shofars. So the Rishonim assume that Rashi was of the opinion that the recitation of these brachas is actually a chi of gomer min haTorah. It doesn't mean the specific nusach of the brachas. It doesn't mean the, you know, atah deglesa. It doesn't mean that doesn't mean all the nusach that we say of the brachas were given to Moshe Ben Hasinai, but it means that the idea that in Rosh Hashanah you have to speak to Kodesh Baruch about these themes of malchus, and shofars, this was actually a real Torah required obligation. How did Rashi know this? Where did Rashi get this idea from? It's such a strange thing. This is a given to Moshe Ben Hasinai. So Rashi got it from a Gemara that we just mentioned. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tezayin that Amra Kodesh Baruch Hu Im Lufanei Malchias, Amra Kodesh Baruch Hu Im Lufanei Zichronis, Amra Kodesh Baruch Hu Im Lufanei Shofros. So Rashi put two and two together. He said Amra Kodesh Baruch Hu, that means Hashem is talking. Hashem spoke in Matan Torah. So Kodesh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people that every Rosh Hashanah comes, they should say Malchias, Zichronis, and Shofros. So there are really two parts of the Avodas Hayom of Rosh Hashanah, Min HaTorah, according to Rashi. There's the blowing of the shofar, that's for sure, Yom Tzur Yalachem, that's for sure, Mitzvah Min HaTorah. And in addition to the blowing of the shofar, there's the unique tefillahs, the extra themes of the Machas and the shofars, they become elevated, Mamsha, it's a chi of tefillah, Gomer on a level of their eyes. That seems to be Shittas Rashi. So the Ramban takes issue with this Rashi. The Ramban, in his Parashat Chumash, points out that the Gemara doesn't sound this way. There's a Gemara in the very, very end of Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara discusses the following scenario. You have a fellow who's living out in the farm somewhere, and he doesn't have a chauffeur, and he doesn't know how to daven, he just no chazan. So the whole Rosh Hashanah is going to go, this is garnished. But he realizes that there are two towns that are close enough for him to get to. One town has a chauffeur, and the other town has a good chazan, but they don't have a chauffeur. So he has two choices. Either he'll go and he has to get shofar, or he'll be yotzei tefillah, he'll hear shmekayin, or he'll be yotzei the mitzvah of davening machas gonis and shofars. He can't go to both. He's out of tchum, whatever it's possible, his wife's not going to let him go to both. Whatever, his wife's not going to be able to go to both. So the bottom line is, it's either town A or town B, he's going to either hear shofar, he's going to hear the davening. So the Gemara says that he goes to hear the shofar. So the Gemara says, that's poshut. It says, pshita, had the raisa, had the rabbanan. But it says shofar is deraisa and davening is only midirabbanim. So why do I need a gemara? Do I need a braisa to tell me that you go to do a mitzvah deraisa? We'd like to do mitzvahs derabbanim also. Mitzvahs derabbanim are very, very important. But when you have a hierarchy of mitzvahs and I have two mitzvahs in front of me and I can only do one, one's deraisa, one's derabbanim, of course you go for the deraisa. So the gemara says pshita, of course you go to the shofar, not to the chazan. The gemara says no. The chiddush is as follows. Let's say I'm not even sure there's a shofar. I think there's a shofar last year. I remember there was a shofar last year in that town. I don't know, maybe it's not there anymore. Maybe the Bachtok K is not around anymore. So I'm not 100% sure that I'm going to hear the shofar in town A. Town B, I know they're having a chazan. They've already been announcing it. They've been publicizing it. I got emails where I get to play. I know exactly what's happening in town B. They're for sure having a, they hired a special chazan. So I know I'm going to hear the chazan. So now I can make a following judgment. Should I go hear the shofar, which I may not even get? I may end up with nothing. Or should I go for the certainty of hearing the chazan? So which is more important, a suffik mitzvah deraisa or a vade mitzvah derabbanan? So the Gemara says the suffik deraisa is more important. That it's better to take the chance, and you may end up with nothing, but you may end up with the deraisa. So it's more important to go hear the shofar, even be suffik, than to daven v'toras vade. So the Ramban asks in his Parash of Chumash, Rashi Zemor against Rashi, you see that the whole flow of the Gemara is obvious, that had deraisa, had derabbanan. The Gemara says, temole, that shofar is deraisa and davening is only midrabbanan. So it's Rashi telling the story that Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Zichron Trua Machas Kadosh Shofar. So what do you mean it's not true? There's no deraisa. Of course it's only midrabbanan. I think Gemara says Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu. Nah, that doesn't really mean it. That means it's a derabbanan. Some reminiscence of something. That's not the real McCoy. It doesn't really mean a mitzvah deraisa. But the Gemara, because the Gemara says black on white, had deraisa, had derabbanan. So what's the pshat in Rashi? So basically all the Shtikl Torahs that I send Rashi all say pretty much the same thing. Each Rosh Hashiva says it with his own nusach. But the basic beer of Rashi is as follows. The Rashi Shita apparently is that if you blow shofar and you daven Malchus and Zichronos Shofar together, then the Malchus and Zichronos Shofar become a deraisa. Malchus and Zichronos Shofar is not a mitzvah b'fnei atzma. It's like a mitzvah of lulav, a sukkah, it's a matzah. It's not a mitzvah that stands on its own 2 feet. It's a mitzvah deraisa when it comes together with the blowing of the shofar. So now, everything makes sense. Rashi says, Taich, the Pasuk Chumash, Zichron Shua means, Zichron is a Malchus, and Shofar. So you have to say the Pesukim, yes, that's a Chi of Gom Minat Torah, if and when you blow the Shofar, then the Davening of Musaf becomes a Deraisa. But if you're going to the town that doesn't have a Shofar, so for you to go just to hear Musaf, that's only the Rabbanim, that's not a Mitzvah Deraisa. So that's the lingo that everybody says, that basically the same Teretz, but that's Rashi. What's the Lomdus? What's the Bir Adon? Why should it be that Minat Torah, there's this concept called the shofar that accompanies the shofar, means if the Torah really, really wants us to say machzikos the shofars, we should say it min haTorah, if without a shofar. The Torah doesn't really care whether we say it or not. So why does having a shofar somehow hocus pocus elevated to be a deraisa? What kind of halacha is this that davening musa becomes deraisa when it's done in the connection with tekiyah shofar? So again, the different rishis say it in different ways. I'll just present it the way the first way I heard it, just at Yom Kisuf. So the first time I ever heard this, I heard this from Mordechai Marcus, my Rebbe back from high school. So he presented it in the following manner. He presented it, he connected it to a shita that appears, the famous shita of the Bach, that we spoke about many, many times, where the Bach says that if you look carefully in the Torah, there are three mitzvahs, that it's not enough just to do the mitzvah itself, but you have to know why you're doing that particular mitzvah. When you sit in the sukkah, you have to know why I'm sitting in the sukkah. How do you know that? Because it says the chumash, man yedu darasechem. When you put on tefillin, you have to know the man tieta shemafichem. You have to think about those things because it says laman. When you put on tzitzis, laman tisku, risim. So you have to think about why you're doing these mitzvahs. Most mitzvahs that you do, let's say you shake a lulav. You want to learn sefer chinuch before and then figure out why you're doing it. It's not tov manuav, but it's not ma'akev by those mitzvahs either. But it's not a kiyum gufa in the mitzvah itself. You have to do the mitzvahs. Whatever lessons and moral lessons you walk away from, whatever machshavas, whatever hashkafas you get, that's good. One mishubach. But in terms of being an integral part of the ma'aseh mitzvah, so the ma'aseh mitzvah is l'chud, the kavanah is l'chud. But sometimes the Torah itself requires of us to concentrate on why we're doing what we're doing. So when the Torah highlights l'man, 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 that teaches us that we have to think about why we're doing these mitzvahs. So Marcus suggested maybe that's what the role of malchus versus shofas is all about. Now, I blow shofar. Why am I blowing shofar? So shofar is really exerts a kosov, and it's a chayik, it's all this, and the Rambam writes, it's all true, but there are reasons behind it, there are things we're supposed to think about when we blow the shofar. What are we supposed to be thinking about when we're blowing the shofar? What should be going through our minds when we're blowing the shofar? The themes of Malchias, Kabbalah, Smach, Shemayim, you blow B'Flei HaMelech, Zichronos, Kodesh Baruch Hu should take out Zichronos, Shofros, the call of Harsinai, and the call of the Nevi'im, and the call of Yasod Lavam, the Mosul Mashiach. All the themes that are expressed throughout the 30 psukim of Machas, Gros, and Shofaros, that's supposed to be our focus, joint, Kiyah Shofar. And that's a din min haTorah. And that's what the Torah means when it says, Zichron Truah Mikra Kodesh. In one place it says, Yom Truah Mikra Kodesh. That's the blowing. And the Zichron Truah Mikra Kodesh is the thinking, Zichron, to remember. You're supposed to think about all these things as you're hearing the Shofar. So now it makes perfect sense. Rashi Shita makes perfect sense that if and when you're blowing the Shofar, then the Davening Musaf is a Deraisa. If you're not blowing the shofar, let's say Shabbos, you're not blowing the shofar. You don't have a shofar in town. You're davening the chiddus, and you don't know how to blow shofar. So you still have to daven musaf. You still have to say machzor mosav shofar. For you, that's only midrabbanan. Min haTorah, the mitzvah machzor mosav shofar is only a mitzvah min haTorah if and when it accompanies the shofar. So the stakes are pretty high for our davening on musaf on Rosh Hashanah. That this is a very, very unique tefillah. This is a deraisa tikkat tefillah. It's eitz tzaron. It's a deraisa tikkat tefillah mikra kodesh. Put the ram. All tefillahs are deraisa. And it's an extra added component of Omer L'Fnei Melech. It's above and beyond the rest of the year. And according to Shitas Rashi, it's mamshe mitzvah deraisa required leizichra tshuva mikra kodesh. The Ritva in Maseches Rosh Hashanah writes that even if it's not an absolute Torah requirement to daven, it falls into the category that the Ritva coins, the Ratzon Hashem. That we spoke about this Ritva many, many times. The Ritva explains that there are some things that a Kodesh Baruch Hu tells us to do, we have to do. We have to put on tefillin, we have to say Kriya Shema, we have to learn, we have to keep Shabbos, etc. And then there are other things that Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you don't have to do, but I'd like you to do. My Ratzon is for you to do it. So the Ritva claims that when that's what the Gemara means when it says Imru Lufani Malchius, Kodesh Baruch Hu is dropping a hint to us and saying that if you want to know how to celebrate Rosh Hashanah properly, this is what you should be doing on Rosh Hashanah. You should be talking about Malchus Shemayim and talking about Zichron, talking about Shofar. Is it a Chi of Gomer? No. The Ritva, unlike Rashi, the Ritva holds it's not a Chi of Gomer in the Torah. It's not like Kishofar. Kishofar is a Chi of Gomer in the Torah. If you don't do it, you're Mevatel Mitzvah Deraisa. No, it's not that. But to say that it's Tam the Rabbana, no, it's not the Rabbana to daven Musaf and Rosh Hashanah. It's Kiyum of Mitzvah of the Ratzon Hashem of Imru Lefanei Malchus Chayes Shefer. So again, we take this with the utmost seriousness. So the Mishnah records this din, the Aisa, the Rabban, whatever you want to call it, of the recitation of the Malchus Chayes Shofros. But there are a couple of things about this din of Malchus Chayes Shofros that are very, very unclear. I mean, for us, we live in a world already where thousand years after these machleks are raging in Klal Yisrael, so we know pretty much how this plays out for us. We know what it says in the Machzor, but there were two different practices that existed at different times in Jewish history, radically different than the way we perform the mitzvah machleks and shofros. So there was one opinion in the Gaonim that maintained that you have to recite machleks and shofros at all the Shemoneh Esrei in Rosh Hashanah, the same as all the other, any other Shabbos and Yontif. So Shabbos and Yontif, you daven seven brachas. So on Rosh Hashanah, Chazal Masachin, you daven nine brachas. So how many brachas you down for Ma'ariv? Nine brachas, and for Shachris, and for Muslim, and for Mincha. So the Malchus Chayes and Shofros was for each and every one of the Shemoneh Esreis. Now, again, true, there weren't too many piyutim floating around, so things were a little bit shorter. But Alpha Bichay, your regular Ma'ariv, regular Mincha, and Rosh Hashanah was the whole Lange Megillah of the Malchus Chayes and Shofros. So that was an opinion that existed in some communities in the days of the Goyim. On the other extreme, there was another minhag that existed in the days of Gaonim. There are some communities that were over there, some Gaonim were of the opinion that the Malchus Chayes and Shofros is not recited by everybody in the silent Shemoneh Esrei. Everybody davens a regular Musaf, a regular Yontif Tikkun Musaf. So you start with that Tavach Hartanah, with Tidon Lanu, with Brechat Aleinu, and Shain, and Kaddish Yisrael Yabazikaran, and Shain, and that's the. And you daven a regular, what would have been a normal Yontif for Shemoneh Esrei. Where does Malchus Chayes and Shofros come into the picture? The Chazan gets up afterwards and he recites the Lange Megillah, the whole long Shemoneh Esrei of Malchus Chayes and Shofros. So if either one of those Minhagim would have become the popular Minhag in Klal Yisrael, it would have been a very, very different looking Rosh Hashanah. So if the first Minhag would have become the popular Minhag, that would have meant a much, much longer davening Rosh Hashanah. If the second Minhag would have become Minhag, it would have shaved off 40 minutes off the Silent Shemoneh Esrei. So we get some, it's a trade-off. I don't know exactly, you know, I didn't make the cheshbon of the hours. We're stuck somewhere in the middle. So the Minhag Yisrael has been for the last about 1,000 years or so, this appeared to be in the later days, the view of the overwhelming majority of Rishayim, that the way our practice is today. And that's the practice in Klal Yisrael today. I don't know of any Jewish community otherwise that does anything different in the last 1,000 years. So we all daven Malchus Chayes and Shofros in our Silent Shemoneh Esrei, and then in addition to Chazaras HaShatz. But a Meir of Shachris Mincha looks like any other Yontif Tikkun Tefillah with just a mere seven brachas. The Baal Mor, we mentioned last night, the Baal Mor has a couple of interesting ideas, observations about the Rosh Hashanah in general. So one of the other interesting tidbits of information about Baal Mor tells you is that he remembers as a little boy that they did things a little bit differently. He grew up in Provence, he grew up in southern France, and he was before the Ramban, so he was 1100s or so. So he says he remembers as a little boy that did things a little bit differently. But as he got older, so again, that's around the time or so, give or take, the 1100s, where it became pretty universal that this is the way it became. But until the days of the Baal Mor, so there were some of these different minhagim were still floating around, actually being put into practice in Klal Yisrael. The reason for the different shita, it's very unclear for the Gemara. The Gemara, the Mishnayos are unclear. The Mishnah just talks about, you know, the blowing the shofar with the Machas and the shofar. It doesn't say clearly this is the only tefillah of Musaf, and it doesn't say clearly it's only the Chazan. So you had different divergent views in Gedolei HaGaonim and Rishonim. But again, for the last 1,000 years, the minhag has become this way, and this is the way we practice, of course, Adayim Hazeh. Even though the brachas of the Machas and the shofar are very, 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 very old, the themes themselves may go back, well, literally all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and even according to those who say they're only the Rabbanav, but they go back to way, way, way back to the original days, the beginning by Sheni, by Ezra, to when they were Masak and the Nuscha, the different brachas. So you're talking about Nuscha of Tefillahs that are at least 2,500 years old, if not older. Nevertheless, the details of the Nuscha Tefillah don't go back as far back as that. The Mishnayos tell us in the Masechet Rosh Hashanah that for each one of these three brachas, so you have to recite a series of psukim. They're different from other kinds of brachas. We make a statement, the Kodesh Baruch is the Melech, and then we prove it. We say, here's the proof. It's a pasuk in Chumash, a pasuk in Navi, a pasuk in Ksuvim. We make a whole statement elaborating upon Machlis Shemayim and Zichron HaShofros, etc. So the Mishnah talks about how many pesukim he's supposed to say. Different opinions. On Maisa Mipaski, he's supposed to say at least lechachila. He's supposed to say 10 pesukim, and the break of the pesukim is supposed to be from chumash, from sum, from levim, and then you conclude one pasuk from chumash, the two that we do today. So even though it's clear that Chazal and Masakin, a very, very unique format of each of the brachas and machas of us and shofros, what was not instituted by Chazal was which psukim to say. It's clear in the Gemara that there was never official formal Moshe Beis Din that you have to say the following pasuk and you have to say the following pasuk. The Gemara tells us that Chazal gave us guidelines, and they said it has to be a pasuk that makes sense. It's got to be a pasuk that talks about Malchus Shemayim. It's got to be a pasuk that talks about Zichronos. And that even within Zichronos, the Gemara says, you should only use psukim that talk about nice things Hashem remembers. We don't want to talk about bad things. You don't want to mention a pasuk that remembers that chatoim. That wouldn't be such a nice thing to do. And we talk about shofars. We want to talk about nice, happy shofars. We don't talk about that. So you have to be careful. So then the Gemara quotes different opinions about what if you have certain words that are not exactly the same word. Let's say you have Hashem pokar esara. So it doesn't say the word zocher. Is that also good? Is that considered to be good? And then the Gemara talks about what if you have a post that talks about Hashem remembering an individual, not remembering a whole tzibur, not remembering the whole world. And so it gets tricky. The Gemara goes through all the details, the whole sugya, the end of the fourth paragraph of Rosh Hashanah. What qualifies the post and what doesn't qualify? If there were specific sukkim that Chazal instituted, so what are we wasting two blot in the Masech Rosh Hashanah telling you what you can and can't put in? So it's clear from the Gemara that there was never an official takona that it has to be these words, these sukkim, this text exactly. The takona of Chavim was, it has to be the basic of Nuscha Bracha. It's got to have 10 sukkim, 3 have to be from Chumash, and 3 from Levim, and 3 from Tzuvim, and last month from Chumash. And it's got to be the basic tzura of the appropriate kinds of machas, chas, and shofros. And then each shul should decide on their own. Each chas make up his own tefillah. He'll scrounge around Tanakh and look around for which psukim suit you as best. So that's clearly the way Chazal instituted this takona. It's for this reason that there were, and Ad Hayom Hazeh there still are, different minhagim in Klal Yisrael as to exactly which the psukim are. So we're so used to our machzor. So we're so convinced that this is the way they've been doing it since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's clearly not the case. There are other machzorim floating around that have a different breakdown of psukim. So even the Yekis, till Adayim, they have a totally different breakdown. They say Tem psukim, and they say Malchus psukim, but they're not even all the same psukim. It's a different presentation of the psukim lagamrei. So there were different minhagim in Klal. So I'm not familiar with the... I imagine that in some of the Sephardi communities there, like I'm a different breakdown of something. I don't remember. All I remember is that when I was in Kibbutz Yavna, all the half the Sephardi boys left Yeshiva for Rosh Hashanah. They said they can't focus on the davening. They said it's so different. And I mean, that Nusach Sephardi, that didn't help them. They needed the real McCoy. So there are different communities have different how the Pesukim are broken down. But everybody's doing the same basic thing. Everyone's doing, we're all saying Tem Pesukim, we're all saying Malchus, we're all saying Zechor. So where, again, whether the root of all this was actually in the Torah, whether the root was at the Chanos HaChavim is up for grabs, but the fact that there was a certain degree of flexibility within the format of the Teresa Tvila, that is clearly the case. It's like Moshe Lamad Davidem, we spoke about this, I think it was last week. We spoke about basically the mitzvah of mitzvah by Tzedakah, so I mentioned about Pesukei Zimra. The Mishkan Yosef Yaakov claims that the saying of Pesukei Zimra was a form of Takara Socham. He claims it goes all the way back to the Atchik Nesek Gedoyla. How can it go back to Atchik Nesek Gedoyla? This guy started with Haidi, this guy's saying here, this guy's everyone's saying, there are 15 different ways of saying it. So the answer was there was never a Takara Socham to say exactly these words. The Takara Socham was that you have to have a Bar Shomer, you have to have a Yishtabach at the end, you have to have Pesukim in the middle. So you have different Minhagi Yisrael as to what those Pesukim in the middle are. So that's okay. So we are familiar with those kinds of takanas, where not every detail of the takana was set into stone. So too, the Davin or Shana Yom Kippur is the same way. The Shana, the Machas Kohen to show for us, not every detail was set into stone. The basic Tzura was set up, again, either in the Torah or in the Rabbanah, but the details were somewhat left up for different communities. When we speak about the Pesukim of Malchus, it goes in Shofros, so the Gemara has certain specifics that have to be observed by everybody. It's not a Hefkim, not a free-for-all. So there are certain Pesukim that the Gemara actually addresses explicitly whether these Pesukim really count for Malchus and Shofros. So one of the Pesukim that we use is the Pasuk of Shema Yisrael. So that's a little bit of a startling Pasuk, because it doesn't say Malchus. It's like the grand finale, the culmination, Shema, because I must have heard my drush from yesterday. Shema Yisrael, it's all important. Everyone's got to hear Shema Yisrael. But in the end of the day, it doesn't say anything about Malchus Shemayim, so everyone says, that's okay. So that's also fine, because everybody knows Shemayim, so that means Kibbutz Malchus Shemayim. Come on, everybody knows that counts for Malchus. But again, it wasn't so pushy. Then the Rishonim discussed that there's another pasuk that got snuck into the text of Machas Kohanim Shofros. That's very, very questionable. That's the very last one. Uviyom Simchaschem Vadechem Rosh Hashanah Veskata B'Chatzotzros. No. I'm not going to imitate the Chazal. Let them say it out. And what a beautiful, wonderful pasuk, but it has absolutely nothing to do with Kiyas Shofar. It has to do with Kiyas Chatzotzros. So how'd that sneak in to become the 10th pasuk? So some of the Rishonim said, you're right, it's all a mistake, get it out. That doesn't belong. Find some other pasuk with the word shofar in it. That doesn't make any sense. So other Rishonim, the Ran and others try to defend this practice and say, well, first of all, you don't really need 10 anyway, so it's lechad chilu said, 10 psukim. And it's such a nice pasuk, come on. You can sing it a little bit, it's a beautiful, it's such an uplifting kind of a pasuk, you know, it's so beautiful. And you know, we do learn some halachas from chatzotzros to shofar, so... Let it be. Zolzai, let it be. So that's somehow it got snuck into our machzor. So that's our minik for the very dearest that we say this last pasuk, even though there was some Rishonim who were very, very much opposed to it. They thought that it was a real, real shalai kedin. But again, it's not makim anyway. You don't need 10 psukim b'diavad. So the Rishonim were willing to let this pasuk go, even though it's not quite fit into the general theme of things. There's another pasuk that in later generations some didn't like. That's the pasuk of... The Yiska, and I got one right before. Zeich Asalot Oisav Chan Barachem Hashem. So that's a famous one from the Rav and others who said, "Hey, wait a second, that pasuk has nothing to do with Zechronos." Zeich Asalot Oisav means that Hakadosh Baruch Hu made a way for us to remember His niflos. That's not what Zechronos is supposed to be. Hakadosh Baruch Hu remembering us, not sending us a souvenir to remember Kriyas Olam. So how in the world did that pasuk sneak into Zechronos? So the Rav said, you have to add one pasuk. He said, it's not correct, it's not true. How did it get there? Because it's the first half of the other pasuk. So people thought it was a set. Somebody stuck in a venemar in the middle. So the Rav said, you have to run another pasuk for good luck. So that's what some communities do, and others just follow what says in the Machzor, the way they've been davening for theirs. Your great-grandfathers didn't add in no other pasuk, so those who follow what says the Machzor, those who many shuls add in another pasuk, and the deference to those who questioned whether that pasuk is really the accurate pasuk or not. So whatever it is, again, this is all the chetchilos with the Yevet, the Yotze, with any, you don't need all 10 altogether in the Torah. Some Rishonim say you could be Yotze in the Torah with Uvsaras Lukas of Leibor. The Gemara says at the end of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Kevin Sha'amu B'Saras L'Chos of Leimah Yotza. So there's a Machlekes of Hashem what that means. Some Hashem say that refers to the Korbanos Hayom of Musaf. So when you get to Musaf on the third day Chol Moed Sukkos and you have no idea what day Chol Moed it is, you don't remember how many Parm there are, so you should just say, B'Saras L'Chos of Leimah, and then go on. So the Gemara says, B'Di Yavi Yotza. You said, Ayin. He said in Rosh, I am what it says in the Chumash. Whatever you say in the Chumash. So some Hashem say, can say the same thing from Achaz Rosh and Shofers. So you get to, you have no idea, what should I say? Kadosh Baruch Hu, you should be the Melech. So, Uvsaras L'Kos of Leimor. Then the Rishonim add on, you have to add on, Uvdivri Kashcha L'Kos of Leimor, V'chulei, Uvdivri Adea V'lech Arvim L'Kos of Leimor, V'chulei, I am Sham, and then Melech L'Kos B'Kash V'yom Zikor. So some Rishonim say that's okay. So if you miss the pasuk here and there, the world won't come to an end. But lechatchila, he's supposed to say the psukim. He's supposed to say the psukim properly. So I almost never, ever, ever will correct the Baal Tefillah, you know, in the middle of the opening. If he says a wrong dicta, Chris, I thought you would correct the Baal Tefillah says a little dicta, go off a little something off, you know, it's not the end of the world. But during Machzor's show for us, if I don't like what it sounds like, so I'll sometimes have to correct my... Because they're supposed to say these psukim. So if you say the pasuk, and the pasuk, you mispronounce, depends how bad the mispronunciation is, like Kriyas HaTorah. If you mispronounce it, and it doesn't change the meaning, it's kefilah, but it changes the meaning of the word legamre. So I ask the humble mechila from the Baal HaTefillah, Baruch Shem, we have such a wonderful, skilled Baal HaTefillah here. So if I ever correct you on something, so it's only because we try to say the psukim properly, because again, the recitation of these psukim is a real, real din. It's a shav deraisa, and for sure, din derabanan, so we try to say pronounce the psukim properly. But if we made a mistake and mispronounced the word for the end, but still, it's no worse than not saying Sir Russell Kusselman. Okay, we'll stop now. We'll mention next week. Thank you.